Australian agriculture, it needs to significantly reduce its livestock numbers and revegetate as much as 13% of the country's cleared land. Those recommendations are included in a fairly controversial new report that maps out a plan for how agriculture and forestry can become zero carbon emitting industries. The report is by scientists and researchers from the think tank Beyond Zero Emissions and the Melbourne Sustainability Society, which is at Melbourne University. Stephen Bygrave is the chief executive of Beyond Zero Emissions and joins me now. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Cameron. How are you?
Good. Let's take a step back to start with. How big is Australia's agricultural carbon footprint?
Look, traditionally, the accounting methodologies say that agriculture makes up about 16, 17, 18% of Australia's national emissions. However, that masks some of the emissions from land clearing. And when you add in land clearing, emissions from agriculture and forestry could be as high as 33%. Now, also, when you take into account some of the potency of some of these gases like methane, which are emitted from ruminants, sheep and cattle, when they digest their food, in fact, these gases, methane, has a very short life, and it traditionally has a global warming potential, a potency of around 23 times carbon dioxide. But when you take into account its short life, lifetime, it actually could be as high as 84 times carbon dioxide. So when you factor in that analysis, agriculture and forestry emissions actually could make up more than half of Australia's total emissions every year.
So between agriculture and forestry, they account for more than transport, energy generation, manufacturing.
That's right. So stationary energy, which is electricity generation, gas consumption, production, etc., makes up around 50% of Australia's emissions. But when you factor in the global warming potential of methane and its short lifetime, agriculture and forestry would actually surpass stationary energy.
Well, what sort of reaction have you had to that finding? Because I must admit, when I read that, I found it hard to believe.
Look, the reaction to the report's been amazing. We launched the report in Melbourne on Wednesday night. We had about 20, 30 farmers there. In fact, John Pettigrew, a farmer from Goulburn Broken area and former director of SPC Limited, provided a keynote at the presentation. The reaction, we had dairy farmers, we had grazing farmers in the audience, and the reaction from the audience was actually extremely positive. I noticed in your headline you referred to slashing livestock numbers and everything else. I think what we're talking about is a managed process, certainly not, doing this in any, in a year or less. So this would be a managed process, recognising the high emissions from livestock, but also from land clearing and other activities. These are not new, messages necessarily, and obviously climate change is happening. It's real. We're heading for 4%, 4 degrees warming by 2100 and up to 9 degrees warming by 2200. And you just can't imagine a world where we're living and we're not reducing emissions. The World Bank has said, for example, that adaptation to a 4-degree world by 2100 is no certainty. So we need to be looking at all sectors in the economy. And look, agriculture is really well positioned. It has the most to gain, but also the most to lose if we don't take climate action. And there are amazing things that farmers are doing already. They're the most innovative in our communities. Many farmers are, undertaking revegetation activities, minimum tillage, enhancing their soil carbon, cell grazing, a whole range of things that we're hearing from farmers about amazing things they're already doing on their land.
But the reason I use the term slashing in the opening there is because the recommendation in the report is a 20% reduction in livestock numbers around Australia, ruminants. How do you propose that's done? Because that is quite a, in some people's view, that's a radical suggestion.
Look, it is fairly radical, but as I said, we'd want to manage that carefully, and obviously, the community would be assisting farmers make this transition. Farmers can't do it on their own; they need assistance from the community and from government. And if we want to move to zero carbon agriculture and forestry, then we need to look at emissions from livestock as well as emissions from land clearing and savanna burning and soil carbon and manure management. There's a whole range of things we need to be looking at. Livestock enteric fermentation, which is the process where cattle essentially burp when they consume their food, that accounts for around 30% of our agricultural emissions. So it is a high source of emissions. Mm. There are a range of ways we can manage that through better nutrition, better diets for cattle. And that is, is leading to some reductions.
And that's been the industry's preference, hasn't it? Rather than reduce the number to make sure that cattle burp and emit less methane and become more productive as a result.
It has been the approach so far, and I know CSIRO has been doing some fantastic work in this space. It's not leading to the reductions that we require, though, in terms of moving towards a zero-carbon future, which is required if we're going to have a habitable planet in 100 years' time. Mm-hmm. And so meat consumption actually has reduced a hell of a lot in Australia. For example, in the late 1930s, to now, we Australians actually have reduced their red meat consumption by around 43%. So, in fact, diets are changing. We are moving away from meat in our diets.
In Australia, but not in Asia, for instance, where animal protein consumption's on the rise.
Look, this is probably more of a Western world phenomena where we're probably more educated and have better access to information about diet and other things. So. Certainly, as a proportion of diet, meat may be increasing in developing countries, and as a proportion of diet in Western countries, it's actually declining. Mm. Now, in terms of the overall number, we export a lot of our meat. So even if livestock numbers were to be reduced by in the order of 20%, that would not actually affect Australia's domestic meat consumption. It would affect potentially meat exports. And those could be replaced with high-value products. I notice in the Agricultural Green Paper that's just been launched by the government, they actually refer to moving to higher-value products that are produced by our agricultural industry. So this is, again, consistent with that approach.
Mm. But if we accept your argument that livestock numbers in Australia have to fall if the industry is to become carbon neutral, do you accept that will come at some cost, though? There are consequences of that, whether they're social or economic?
Look, there are transitions that would be required. And as I said, the actual livestock export trade does actually not earn Australia a lot of revenue. And it's high cost, and the return we actually get is low. As I mentioned, there are other processes and other products, agricultural products, that can be used to replace those activities.
Yeah, but there are large parts of Australia. The North is heavily reliant on beef exports, large parts of WA, Queensland, the Territory, and there are large parts of the regional economy in places like Victoria and Tasmania that are reliant on dairy exports. So even if nationally it's not significant overall, in parts of Australia, if you took animal protein exports out of the equation, there'd be huge consequence.
Look, it needs to be looked at a regional basis, and certainly there are some areas which would be more impacted than others. We've looked at an average number across the country, looking at our different bioregions, and in some regions, you wouldn't be able to reduce livestock numbers by that amount. So it is an average number. That doesn't necessarily apply to each region itself.
Mm, okay. We also need to put some historical context into this. At the moment, we've got the beef herd that it's at it's been stagnant for the best part of 10 years now. Dairy cow numbers have been falling for a reasonable amount of time, and sheep and lamb numbers are well down, by some estimates 100 million down on their high point. So I guess my point is that a lot of work has already been done. How much further do you think you can really squeeze the livestock sector?
Look, I think it's fair to say that those reduction in cattle numbers and sheep numbers are actually due to the drought, the millennium drought that we've just come out of. So, in fact, it's been part of our adaptation process to climate change and climate variability. So That is a consequence of us actually not dealing with climate change adequately. You know, we are going to get more droughts, more bushfires, more floods, and more extreme weather events. And all scientists are telling us this. This isn't some fantasy. You know, institutions like the World Bank, the IMF, the International Energy Agency are all saying this. So we're not extremists by saying climate change is happening.
No, but it's a little...
It is happening, and the reduction in livestock numbers actually is a result of droughts.
Maybe some, but a lot of it, you'd have to agree, wouldn't you, that a lot of it's economic as well, deregulation in the instance of dairy, and just purely commodity, return on commodity for the sheep and lamb.
And the high Australian dollar.
So we can't just attribute it to...
as well.
Sure. That's destocking is just one part of the report. It's an interesting suggestion, but it does no doubt come with its challenges. I want to look at also the idea of large-scale revegetation as well. Just outline for me what the suggestion is in the report.
Yeah, that's right. Although we focused already in this interview on reduction in livestock numbers, we have looked at a range of other strategies to reduce emissions from the agriculture and forestry sectors. And as I said earlier, these sectors have the most to gain and the most to lose from not acting on climate change. And revegetation is actually one of the big opportunities for the agricultural sector and the forestry sector. We have, in this study, we interviewed six farmers, and we did six case studies and looked at what they're doing on the land in terms of revegetation, increasing soil carbon, nutrient recycling, minimum tillage, etc. And there are a range of farmers, as I mentioned earlier, who are doing amazing things on the land. Revegetation is one of them, and there are revenue opportunities to be made, jobs to be created, rejuvenating rural areas and enhancing their vitality. So we can actually bring people back to the land. At the moment, we've got a lot of people leaving farms, a lot of farmers, children not taking on the farm when the fathers and mothers retire. We've got people moving off the land. This is an opportunity actually to bring people back, enhance regional communities, and actually create another revenue stream for farmers and diversify the income sources.
What,
in fact, this is happening
already. What is
that revenue
stream? How do you generate a revenue through revegetation?
Yeah, so one example is the Carbon Farming Initiative, which is an initiative under the previous Labor government as part of the Carbon Price and the Clean Energy Future Package. The coalition government, when it came into power last year, thought that was a great initiative, kept it going, and it's still going, and it provides a revenue stream for farmers. So when a farmer plants trees, as those trees grow, they sequester carbon, and credits can be given to the farmers for every ton of carbon that's sequestered. So they actually have credits that they can sell in a market, and they can also be traded overseas in other international trading schemes, carbon trading schemes, emission trading schemes like those in Europe and the US.
But how much of that is actually real and happening? There's been numerous articles in the paper of properties, farm owners that invested in this, put basically backed their future in carbon farming and lost the farm as a result.
No. I've been keeping very close track of this. In fact, there's a lot of farmers earning good money from this. In fact, they're worried that the carbon farming initiative may slow down or even stop. So they're actually lobbying government to keep it because they have made huge investments. They are earning great revenue. They're only doing a lot of this revegetation activity because of the credits that are available. And there's good money to be made. There are many farmers putting aside 30, 40, 50, 80 hectares on their properties, which are dedicated carbon sinks. And they have to be planted for permanent, up to 20, 25 years to be eligible. They have to ensure that those trees will remain in the ground because it's no good just planting a tree and chopping it down the next year. And there are farmers making, good revenue from this, and it also assists them with peaks and troughs in prices from their other commodities and ensures a guaranteed revenue stream.
Okay. But while that may be happening on some properties, you've also got properties in or farmers, landowners in Queensland that are clearing land again, and there is a desire in parts of New South Wales for land clearing laws to be relaxed. So there is a sentiment there there is a section of the community there, the farming community, that would really would not be keen on this idea at all. In fact, they're going in the opposite direction.
Look, there are land clearing regulations and land clearing laws around Australia. Each of the states has a different approach to this. Land clearing is a very high source of our emissions, and you know, it's up to 90-odd million tonnes a year. And, you know, for many, many years, in fact, only up until 30 years ago, it was a requirement that when a farmer had land that they were required to clear it, and particularly on Crown land. That is a very high source of emissions. Let's not be unrealistic about that. Mm. And for us to realistically manage our emissions, we need to, you know, stop land clearing, because it is a very high source of emissions. This isn't new again. Previous governments have talked about this. It was an approach of the Howard government, in fact, under the Kyoto negotiations back in the late 1990s to prevent land clearing. And it's been relaxed in Queensland recently under the Newman government, but it is a huge source of emissions in Australia.
Yeah, but it's also difficult to overstate how emotionally charged this issue is in some parts of rural Australia. To say, let's just turn it around, let's stop it, it's much easier said than done.
Look, it is a highly charged issue. You know, there was a death of a person in New South Wales who was putting an order to prevent a farmer clearing land on his property in New South Wales. He was shot dead, a father of eight. It is a highly emotionally charged issue. What our role is to do is to say, if we want to move to a zero carbon future, if we want to reduce our emissions, we're outlining a plan on how we can do that. We're not just looking at agriculture and forestry. We've done reports on energy, buildings, transport, high-speed rail, etc. And every sector has to play its part if we are going to be living on this planet in a sustainable way in 100 years' time, because at the moment it's looking very dire indeed.
Mm. Just in summary, to finish up, if we can, Stephen, it seems to me that the report shows us, demonstrates to us that scientifically it is possible to have a agricultural and forestry sector that is carbon neutral. But doesn't it also highlight that socially, politically and economically we've got a very, very difficult road ahead?
Look, that's exactly right, Cameron. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. It is possible. We can do this. I think that's what the report is showing. If we want to do this, the report is outlining a pathway in which we can do it. There are challenges. There are amazing things being done by farmers already. They're extremely innovative. In fact, the farmers I talk to say, you'll be surprised at what's already happening on the land. There are farmers taking the lead here. They're also looking for the government to take a lead. John Pettigrew, who launched this report and provided a keynote for us on Wednesday in Melbourne, said that, and the Green Paper, the Agricultural Green Paper, again makes this point, that we need to be marketing ourselves as clean, green and safe. There are enormous opportunities and markets to be gained also if we take this road. There are economic challenges, and as in the past where the community has assisted in the transition in forestry, in fisheries which have been unsustainable, in water management, this is another area where the community can also assist. And farmers can't do it on their own. Farmers need to be and want to be taking these activities in many cases, but they do need assistance, and they do need economic assistance and social assistance. On the social side, though, we have rural communities who are dying. We have farmers leaving the land. We have regional towns who are becoming ghost towns. And here's an opportunity through revegetation. And we're only talking on average 13% of Australia's land, and we can do that on steep slopes, on areas of land which are currently unproductive, affected by salinity, and in fact we can enhance the productivity and enhance the opportunities for farmers on the land.
Yeah, I guess you say only, but some people would see that as a large, large area of Australia's landscape. But more discussions for down the track. Stephen, look, thank you for coming in. It's a really interesting report. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Cameron. Cheers. Have a great day.
Stephen Bygrave, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Beyond Zero Emissions. That report is on a zero carbon future for Australia's agriculture and forestry sectors, and it's a report by Beyond Zero Emissions and also the Melbourne Sustainability Society Institute. That's at Melbourne University. You're listening to Bush Telegraph.